I can't fight in a racing outfit. This is ridiculous. Lit's eye twitched. Sire, you were about to relieve me of duty? By killing me? Oh, right. Well then, go sacrifice yourself. Prove you're more useful than that idiot father of yours. Honestly, Midas had the golden touch, and he still couldn't do anything right. You're no better. The skin around Latirces' ostrich bruise reddened, as if the bird were still standing on his face. Sire, with respect. Commodus's hand shot out like a rattlesnake, clamping around the swordsman's throat. Respect, the emperor hissed. You talk to me of respect. Arrows sailed toward the emperor's remaining guards. Both Germani fell with lovely new silver-feathered nose piercings. A third missile hurtled toward Commodus. The emperor yanked Latirces into its path, and the arrow point erupted from the front of Lit's thigh. The swordsman screamed. Commodus dropped him in disgust. Do I have to kill you myself? Really? He raised his knife. Something inside me, no doubt a character flaw, made me feel pity for the wounded cornhusker. Livia, I said. The elephant understood. She trunk-smacked Commodus upside the head, knocking him flat on the turf. Latirces fumbled for the hilt of his sword. Finding it, he jabbed the point into the emperor's exposed neck. Commodus howled, clamping his hand over the wound. Judging from the amount of blood, I deduced that the cut, sadly, had missed his jugular. Commodus's eyes blazed. Oh, Latirces, you traitor. I will kill you slowly for that. But it was not meant to be. The closest Germani, seeing their emperor bleeding on the ground, ran to his aid. Livia scooped up Latirces and backed us away, as the barbarians closed ranks around Commodus, forming a shield wall, their bristling pole arms pointed at us. The Germani looked ready to counterattack, but before they could, a line of flames rained down between our two groups. Festus the dragon landed next to Livia. The Germani hastily retreated while Commodus screamed, Put me down! I need to kill those people! Atop Festus, Leo saluted me like a fellow fighter pilot. What's up, Lesteropolis? Joe got your emergency signal. She sent us back right away. Thalia Grace jogged over with two of her hunters. We need to evacuate. We'll be overrun in a few minutes. She pointed to the end zone, where the survivors from Festus's fiery victory lap were starting to form ranks. 100 assorted centaurs, cynocephali, and demigods from the imperial household. I glanced to the sidelines. Leading into the lowest tier of seats was a ramp, possibly wide enough for an elephant. I'm not leaving Livia behind. Take Latirces, and take the throne of memory. I unslung the chair, thankful again for its light weight, and tossed it across to Leo. That throne has to get back to Georgie. I'll ride Livia out one of the mortal exits. The elephant dumped Latirces onto the turf. The cornhusker groaned and pressed his hands around the arrow in his leg. Leo frowned. Apollo? I will not leave this noble elephant behind to be tortured, I insisted. No, I get that, Leo pointed at Lit. But why would we take this fool? He tried to kill me in Omaha. He threatened Calypso at the zoo. Can't I just let Festus stomp him? No. I wasn't sure why I felt so strongly about it. Commodus betraying this swordsman made me almost as angry as Nero manipulating Meg. Or, well, yes, Zeus abandoning me in the mortal world for the third time. He needs healing. He'll behave himself, won't you, Lit? Latirces grimaced in pain, blood soaking through his tattered jeans, but he managed a slight nod.
Leo sighed. Whatever, man. Festus, we're taking this bleeding idiot with us, okay? But if he gets uppity en route, feel free to chuck him against the side of a skyscraper. Festus croaked in agreement. I'll go with Apollo. Thalia Grace climbed up behind me on the elephant, which fulfilled a daydream I'd once had about the pretty hunter, though I hadn't imagined it happening quite this way. She nodded at one of her comrades. Iphigenia, get the rest of the hunters out of here. Go! Leo grinned and slung the throne of memory across his back. See y'all back home, and don't forget to pick up some salsa. Festus flapped his metallic wings. The dragon grabbed Laterces and launched himself skyward. The hunters activated their winches. They ascended as the first wave of angry spectators arrived on the field, throwing spears and vuvuzelas that fell clattering back to earth. When the hunters were gone, the crowd turned their attention to us. Livia, I said, how fast can you run? The answer? Fast enough to evade an armed mob, especially with Thalia Grace on her back, shooting arrows and brandishing her shield of terror at anyone who got too close. Livia seemed to know the corridors and ramps of the stadium. They'd been designed for large crowds, which made them equally convenient for elephants. We made a few turns around the souvenir kiosks, barreled through a service tunnel, and finally emerged on a loading dock on South Missouri Street. I'd forgotten how wonderful sunlight felt. Crisp, fresh air on a late winter day. Granted, it wasn't as exhilarating as driving the sun chariot, but it was a darn sight better than the snake-infested sewers of Commode Palace. Livia lumbered down Missouri Street. She turned into the first blind alley she saw, then stomped and shook. I was pretty sure I understood her message. Take off this stupid chainmail. I translated for Thalia, who shouldered her bow. I don't blame her. Poor elephant. Women warriors should travel light. Livia lifted her trunk as if to say thank you. We spent the next 10 minutes de-armoring the elephant. Once we were done, Livia gave Thalia and me a group hug with her trunk. My adrenaline rush was fading, leaving me feeling like a deflated inner tube. I sank down with my back against the brick wall and shivered in my damp clothes. Thalia produced a canteen from her belt. Instead of offering it to me first, as would have been proper, she poured some liquid into her cupped hand and let Livia drink. The elephant slurped down 5 handfuls. Not much for a big animal, but she blinked and grunted in a satisfied way. Thalia took a sip herself, then handed the canteen to me. Thanks, I mumbled. I drank, and my vision cleared immediately. I felt as if I'd just had 6 hours of sleep and a good hot meal. I stared in amazement at the battered canteen. What is this? Not nectar. No, Thalia agreed. It's moon water. I dealt with the hunters of Artemis for millennia, but I had never heard of moon water. I recalled Josephine's story about bootlegging in the 1920s. Do you mean moonshine, as in liquor? Thalia laughed. No, it's not alcoholic, but it is magic. Lady Artemis never told you about this stuff, eh? It's like an energy drink for hunters. Men rarely ever get a taste. I poured a tiny bit into my palm. The stuff looked like regular water, though perhaps more silver, as if it had been blended with a trace amount of liquid mercury. I considered taking another sip, then decided it might make my brain vibrate to the point of liquefying. I passed back the canteen. Have you talked to my sister? Thalia's expression turned serious. In a dream, a few weeks ago, Lady Artemis said that Zeus has forbidden her from seeing you. She's not even supposed to give us orders to help you. I had suspected as much. But having my fears confirmed would have overwhelmed me with despair if not for the moon water. Its energy burst kept me humming right along over the deeper emotions, like wheels skimming across the top of loose sand. You're not supposed to help me, I said. And yet you're here. Why? Thalia gave me a coy smile that would have made Britta Martis proud. We were just in the area. Nobody ordered us to help. We've been searching for a particular monster for months now, and... She hesitated. Well, that's another story. The point is, we were passing through. We helped you the way we'd help any demigod in danger. She didn't mention anything about Britta Martis finding the hunters and urging them to come here. I decided to play her little game of let's pretend that never happened. Can I guess another reason? I asked. I think you decided to help me because you like me. The corner of Thalia's mouth twitched. What makes you say that? Oh, come now. The first time we met, you said I was hot. Don't think I didn't hear that comment. I was gratified to see her face turn red. I was younger then, she said. I was a different person. I'd just spent several years as a pine tree. My vision and reasoning were impaired from sap damage. Ouch, I complained. That's harsh. Thalia punched my arm. You need an occasional dose of humility. Artemis says so all the time. My sister is a sneaky, deceptive... Watch it, Thalia warned. I am her lieutenant. I crossed my arms in a petulant Meg sort of way. Artemis never told me about Moonwater. She never told me about the way station. It makes me wonder how many other secrets she's hiding. Maybe a few. Thalia's tone was carefully nonchalant. But you've gotten to see more this week than most non-hunters ever do. You should feel lucky. I stared down the alley, thinking of that first New York alley I'd fallen into as Lester Papadopoulos. So much had changed since then, yet I was no closer to being a god. In fact, the memory of being a god seemed more distant than ever. Yes, I grumbled, very lucky. Come on, Thalia offered me a hand. Commodus won't wait long before he launches a reprisal. Let's get our elephant friend back to the way station. 28. Belching stinky smoke. What gene pool did you come from? Wait, what? Insert scream. As it turned out, getting an elephant into the way station was not as hard as I'd imagined. I'd had visions of trying to cram Livia up a ladder chute or renting a helicopter to drop her through the roof hatch into the griffin nests. But as soon as we arrived at the side of the building, bricks rumbled and rearranged themselves, creating a wide archway and a gentle downward ramp. Livia tromped inside without hesitation. At the bottom of the corridor, we found a perfect elephant stable with high ceilings, ample stacks of hay, slatted windows to let in the sunlight, a stream wending through the middle of the room, and a big screen television turned to Hephaestus TV's Elephant Channel, showing the real elephants of the African Veld. I did not know Hephaestus TV had such a channel. It must have been included in the premium bundle, which I didn't subscribe to. Best of all, there was not a gladiator or a set of elephant armor in sight. Livia huffed in approval. I'm glad you like it, my friend, I dismounted, followed by Thalia. Now enjoy yourself while we go find our hosts. Livia waded into the stream and rolled onto her side, giving herself a trunk shower. She looked so content I was tempted to join her, but I had less pleasant matters to attend to. Come on, Thalia said. I know the way. I didn't see how, The way station shifted and changed so much, it shouldn't have been possible for anyone to learn their way around. But true to her word, Thalia led me up several flights of stairs, through a gymnasium I'd never seen, and back to the main hall where a crowd had gathered. Josephine and Emmy knelt by the sofa where Georgina lay shaking, crying and giggling. Emmy tried to get the little girl to drink some water. Joe dabbed Georgie's face with a washcloth. Next to them stood the throne of Namazini, but I couldn't tell whether they had tried to use it yet. Certainly Georgie appeared no better. Over at Josephine's workstation, Leo was inside Festus's chest cavity, using a welding torch. The dragon had curled up as tightly as possible, but he still took up a third of the room. The side of his ribcage was propped open like the hood of a Mack truck. Leo's legs stuck out, sparks showering the floor around him. Festus didn't seem concerned by this invasive surgery. Deep in his throat, he made a low, clattering purr. Calypso looked fully recovered from yesterday's jaunt to the zoo. She dashed around the room, bringing food, drink, and medical supplies to the rescued prisoners. Some of the folks we'd freed made themselves right at home, helping themselves to the pantry, rummaging through cabinets with such familiarity I suspected they'd been longtime residents at the waystation before being captured. The two emaciated boys sat at the dining table, trying to pace themselves as they chewed pieces of fresh bread. Hunter Kowalski, the silver-haired girl, stood in a tight circle with the other hunters of Artemis, as they muttered together and cast suspicious glances at Latirces. The cornhusker sat in a recliner in the corner, facing the wall, his wounded leg now properly bandaged. Sarah, the Drisena, had discovered the kitchen. She stood at the counter, holding a basket of fresh henhouse eggs, swallowing each whole one after the other. Tall, dark, and Jamie was up in the griffin roost, making friends with Heloise and Abelard. The griffins allowed him to scratch under their beaks, a sign of great trust, especially since they were guarding an egg in their nest. And no doubt worried that Sarah might see it. Sadly, Jamie had put on clothes. He now wore a caramel brown business suit with an open-collared dress shirt. I didn't know where he'd found such a nice outfit to fit his massive frame. Perhaps the waystation supplied clothing as easily as it supplied elephant habitats. The rest of the freed prisoners milled around, nibbling on bread and cheese, staring in awe at the stained glass ceiling, and occasionally flinching at loud noises, which was completely normal for those suffering from post-comatous stress disorder. Headless Agamethus floated among the newcomers, offering them his magic eight ball, which I suppose was his idea of schmoozing. Meg McCaffrey had changed into a different green dress and jeans, which completely threw off her usual spotlight color scheme. She walked over to me, punched me in the arm, then stood next to me as if we were waiting for a bus. "Why did you hit me?" I asked.
"Saying hello."
"Ah. Meg, this is Thalia Grace." I wondered if Meg would hit her hello as well, but Meg simply reached across and shook Thalia's hand.
"Hi."
Thalia smiled.
"A pleasure, Meg. I've heard you're quite a swordswoman."
Meg squinted through her grimy glasses.
"Where'd you hear that?"
"Lady Artemis has been watching you. She keeps an eye on all promising young women warriors." "Oh no," I said.
"You can tell my beloved sister to back off. Meg is my demigod companion."
"Master,"
Meg corrected. Same difference. Thalia laughed. "Well, if you two will excuse me, I'd better go check on my hunters before they kill the Tirses." The lieutenant marched off.
"Speaking of that," Meg pointed toward the wounded son of Midas, "why do you bring him here?"
The cornhusker hadn't moved. He stared at the wall,
facing away from the crowd as if intentionally inviting a knife in the back. Even from across the room, waves of hopelessness and defeat seemed to radiate from him. "You said it yourself," I told Meg. "Everything living deserves a chance to grow."
"Huh. Chia seeds don't work for evil emperors. They don't try to kill your friends."
I realized Peaches was nowhere to be seen. "Is your Karpos all right?"
"He's okay. Went away for a while."
She waved vaguely at the air, indicating that magical land where peach spirits go when they are not devouring their enemies or screaming peaches.
"You actually trust Lit?"
Meg's tone was harsh, but her lower lip trembled. She lifted her chin as if preparing for a punch, the same way Laterces had looked when the Emperor betrayed him. The same way the goddess Demeter had looked ages ago, standing in front of Zeus's throne, her voice full of pain and disbelief. "Will you actually let Hades get away with kidnapping my daughter Persephone?" Meg was asking if we could trust Laterces. But her real question was much larger. Could she trust anyone? Was there anyone in the world, family, friend, or Lester, who would ever truly have her back? "Dear Meg," I said, "I can't be sure about Laterces, but I think we must try. We only fail when we stop trying." She studied a callus on her index finger.
"Even after somebody tries to kill us?"
I shrugged. "If I gave up on everyone who has tried to kill me, I would have no allies left on the Olympian Council." She pouted.
"Families are dumb."
"On that," I said, "we can fully agree." Josephine glanced over and saw me.
"He's here!"
She hustled over, grabbed my wrist, and hauled me toward the couch.
"We've been waiting. What took you so long? We have to use the chair."
I bit back a retort. It might have been nice to hear, "Thank you, Apollo, for freeing all these prisoners. Thank you for returning our daughter." She could at least have decorated the main hall with a few "Apollo is the greatest" banners, or offered to remove the uncomfortable iron manacle on my ankle. "You didn't have to wait for me," I complained.
"Yes, we did," Josephine said. "Every time we tried to put Georgie in the throne, she flailed around and shrieked your name."
Georgie's head lolled toward me.
"Apollo! Death! Death! Death!"
I winced.
"I really wish she'd stop making that connection."
Emmy and Josephine lifted her gently and sat her on the throne of Mnemosyne. This time, Georgie did not resist. Curious hunters and freed prisoners gathered around, though I noticed Meg stayed in the back of the room, well away from Georgina.
"The notepad on the counter."
Emmy pointed toward the kitchen.
"Someone grab it, please."
Calypso did the honors. She hurried back with a small yellow legal pad and a pen. Georgina swayed. Suddenly, all her muscles seemed to melt. She would have slumped out of the chair if her parents hadn't held her.
Then she sat bolt upright. She gasped. Her eyes flew open, her pupils as wide as quarters.
Black smoke belched from her mouth.
The rancid smell, like boiling roof tar and rotten eggs, forced everyone back except for the Dracaena.
Sarah, who sniffed the air hungrily. Georgina tilted her head. Smoke curled through the choppy brown tufts of her hair, as if she were an automaton, or a Blemyai with a malfunctioning fake noggin.
"Father!"
Her voice pierced my heart. So sharp and painful, I thought my bandolier of scalpels had turned inward. It was the same voice. The same cry I had heard thousands of years ago, when Trophonius had prayed in agony,
pleading for me to save Agamethus from the collapsed thieves' tunnel. Georgina's mouth contorted into a cruel smile.
So, have you finally heard my prayer?
Her voice was still that of Trophonius. Everyone in the room looked at me. Even Agamethus, who had no eyes, seemed to fix me with a withering glare. Emmy tried to touch Georgina's shoulder. She recoiled as if the little girl's skin were molten hot.
Apollo, what is this?
She demanded.
This isn't prophecy.
This has never happened before. You sent this little sister of mine to do your errands.
Georgina tapped her own chest, her eyes wide and dark, still focused on me.
You're no better than the Emperor.
I felt as if a chainmail elephant were standing on my chest.
This little sister.
If he meant that literally, then...
Trophonius.
I could barely speak.
I didn't send Georgina. She isn't my...
Tomorrow morning, Trophonius said. The cave will only be accessible at first light. Your prophecy will unfold. Or the Emperor's. Either way, there will be no hiding in your little haven. Come in person. Bring the girl, your master. You will both enter my sacred cavern.
A horrible laugh escaped Georgina's mouth.
Perhaps both of you will survive. Or will you suffer the same fate as my brother and I?
I wonder, Father, to whom will you pray?
With one final belch of blackness, Georgina toppled sideways. Josephine scooped her up before she could hit the floor. Emmy rushed to help. Together they placed Georgie gently on the couch again, tucking her in with blankets and pillows. Calypso turned to me. The empty notepad dangled from her hand.
Correct me if I'm wrong, she said, but that was no prophecy. That was a message to you.
The collective gaze of the crowd made my face itch. It was the same feeling I used to have when an entire Greek village looked to the heavens and called my name, pleading for rain. And I was too embarrassed to explain that rain was actually Zeus's department. The best I could offer them was a catchy new song. You're right, I said, though it pained me to agree with the sorceress. Trophonius did not give the girl a prophecy. He gave her a recorded greeting. Emmy stepped toward me, her fists clenched.
Will she be healed?
When a prophecy's expelled on the throne of memory, the supplicant usually returns to normal within a few days.
Will Georgie? Her voice broke. Will she come back to us? I wanted to say yes.
Back in the old days, the recovery rate for supplicants of Trophonius had been around 75%, and that was when the petitioners were properly prepared by the priests, the rituals all done correctly, and the prophecy interpreted on the throne immediately after visiting the Cave of Terrors. Georgina had sought out the cave on her own with little or no preparation. She'd been trapped with that madness and darkness for weeks.
I don't know, I admitted. We can hope.
We can hope? Emmy demanded. Josephine took her hand.
Georgie will get better. Have faith.
That's better than hope. But her eyes stayed on me a little too long, accusing, questioning. I prayed she would not fetch her submachine gun.
Ahem,
Leo said. His face was lost in the shadow of his raised welding visor, his grin fading in and out of sight a la the Cheshire Cat.
The thing about little sister. If Georgie is Trophonius' sister, does that mean... He pointed at me. Never before had I wished I were a Blemmyi. Now I wanted to hide my face inside my shirt. I wanted to pull off my head and throw it across the room. I don't know. It would explain a lot, Calypso ventured. Why Georgina felt so attuned to the Oracle. Why she was able to survive the experience. If you, I mean, not Lester, but Apollo is her parent. She has parents. Josephine put her arm around Emmy's waist. We're standing right here. Calypso raised her hands in apology. Of course. I just meant... 7 years, Emmy interrupted, stroking her daughter's forehead. 7 years we've raised her. It never mattered where she came from or who her biological parents might have been. When Agamethus brought her, we checked the news. We checked the police reports. We sent Iris messages to all our contacts. No one had reported a missing baby girl like her. Her birth parents either didn't want her or couldn't raise her. She glared at me. Or maybe they didn't even know she existed. I tried to remember. Honestly, I did. But if the god Apollo had enjoyed a brief romance with some Midwesterner 8 years ago, I had no recollection of it. I was reminded of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, who had also come to my attention when he was 7 years old. Everyone said, oh, surely he is the son of Apollo. The other gods looked at me for confirmation, and I wanted so badly to say, yes, that boy's genius was all me. But I simply could not remember ever having met Wolfgang's mother. Or, for that matter, his father. Georgina has excellent parents, I said. Whether she is a child of Apollo, I'm sorry. I can't say for sure. You can't say, Josephine echoed flatly. But I do think she will heal. Her mind is strong. She risked her life and her sanity to bring us that message. The best we can do now is follow the Oracle's instructions. Josephine and Emmy exchanged looks that said, he's a scoundrel, but we have too much going on right now. We'll kill him later. Meg McCaffrey crossed her arms. Even she seemed to sense the wisdom of changing the subject. So we go at first light? Josephine focused on her with difficulty, as if wondering where Meg had suddenly appeared from. I had this thought often. Yes, hun. That's the only time you can enter the Cavern of Prophecy. I sighed inwardly. First it had been the zoo at first light, then the canal walk at first light, now the caverns. I really wish dangerous quests could start at a more reasonable time, like perhaps 3 in the afternoon. An uneasy silence settled over the room. Georgina breathed raggedly in her sleep. Up in the roost, the griffins ruffled their feathers. Jamie cracked his knuckles pensively. Finally, Thalia Grace stepped forward. What about the rest of the message? Your prophecy will unfold, or the Emperor's. No hiding in your little haven? I'm not sure, I admitted. Leo raised his arms. All hail the God of Prophecy. Oh, shut up, I grumbled. I don't have enough information yet. If we survive the caverns... I can interpret those lines, Laterce said from his chair in the corner. The son of Midas turned to face the crowd, his cheeks a patchwork of scars and bruises, his eyes empty and desolate. Thanks to the tracking devices I put on your griffins, Commodus knows where you are. He'll be here first thing tomorrow morning, and he'll wipe this place off the map.
29. Carrot peeling god. Tofu stir fry is good, but needs more igboya. Laterces had a talent for making friends. Half the crowd surged forward to kill him, the other half shouted that they too wanted to kill him, and the first half should get out of their way. You villain! Hunter Kowalski yanked Laterces from his chair and shoved him against the wall. She pressed a borrowed screwdriver against his throat.
Stand aside,
Sarah yelled.
I will swallow him whole. I should have thrown him against the side of the building,
Leo growled.
Stop!
Josephine waded through the mob. Not surprisingly, folks moved aside. She pulled Hunter Kowalski off her prey, then glared at Laterces as if he were a chariot with a busted axle. You put trackers on our griffins? Lit rubbed his neck. Yes, and the plan worked. You're sure Commodus knows our location? Normally I avoided attracting the attention of an angry mob, but I felt compelled to speak. He's telling the truth, I said. We heard Laterces talking to Commodus in the throne room. Leo was supposed to tell you about that.
Me?
Leo protested.
Hey, things were chaotic. I thought you...
His welding visor fell shut, making the rest of his sentence unintelligible. Laterces spread his arms, which were so scarred they looked like testing logs for hacksaw blades.
Kill me if you want. It'll make no difference. Commodus will level this place and everyone in it.
Thalia Grace drew her hunting knife. Instead of gutting the swordsman, she drove the blade into the nearest coffee table.
The hunters of Artemis won't allow that. We fought too many impossible battles. We've lost too many of our sisters. But we've never backed down. Last summer in the Battle of Old San Juan...
She hesitated. It was difficult to imagine Thalia at the edge of tears, but she seemed to be struggling to maintain her punk rock facade. I remembered something Artemis had told me when we were in exile together on Delos. How her hunters and the Amazons had fought the giant Orion in Puerto Rico. An Amazon base had been destroyed. Many had died. Hunters who, if not cut down in battle, might have continued to live for millennia. As Lester Papadopoulos, I found that idea freshly horrifying.
We will not lose the waystation, too,
Thalia continued.
We'll stand with Josephine and Emmy. We kicked Commodus's podex today. We'll do it again tomorrow. The hunters cheered.
I may have cheered also. I always love it when courageous heroes volunteer to fight battles I don't want to fight.
Laterces shook his head. What you saw today was only a fraction of Commodus's full strength. He's got vast resources.
Josephine grunted. Our friends gave him a bloody nose today, at least. Maybe he won't attack tomorrow. He'll need time to regroup. Lit let out a broken laugh.
You don't know Commodus like I do. You just made him mad. He won't wait. He never waits. First thing tomorrow, he'll strike hard. He'll kill us all.
I wanted to disagree. I wanted to think that the Emperor would drag his feet, then decide to leave us alone because we'd been so entertaining at the dress rehearsal, then possibly send us a box of chocolates by way of apology. But I did know Commodus. I remembered the Flavian amphitheater floor littered with corpses. I remembered the execution lists. I remembered him snarling at me, his lips flecked with blood.
You sound like my father. I'm done thinking about consequences.
Laterces is right, I said. Commodus received a prophecy from the Dark Oracle.
He needs to destroy this place and kill me before he can have his naming ceremony tomorrow afternoon. Which means he'll strike in the morning. He's not a fan of waiting for what he wants.
We could slither away,
suggested Sarah.
Move. Hide. Live to fight another day.
At the back of the crowd, the ghost Agamethus pointed empathically to the Drusena, obviously agreeing with her idea.
You have to wonder about your chances in combat when even your dead friends are worried about dying.
Josephine shook her head.
I'm not slithering anywhere. This is our home.
Calypso nodded.
And if Emmy and Joe are staying put, so are we.
They saved our lives. We'll fight to the death for them, right, Leo?
Leo raised his visor.
Absolutely.
Though I've already done the whole dying thing, so I'd prefer to fight to someone else's death. For instance, Commode Man's.
Leo,
Calypso warned.
Yeah, we're in.
They'll never get past us.
Jamie slipped to the front through a line of hunters. Despite his size, he moved as gracefully as Agamethus, almost as if floating.
I owe you a debt.
He inclined his head to the hunters, to Meg and me, to Josephine and Emmy.
You saved me from the madman's prison. But I hear much talk about us and them. I am always wary when people speak this way. As if people can be so easily divided into friend and enemy. Most of us here do not even know each other.
The big man swept a hand across the crowd. Hunters, ex-hunters, an ex-god, an ex-titaness. Demigods, a snake woman, a couple of griffins, a decapitated ghost. And downstairs we had an elephant named Livia. Rarely had I seen a more motley collection of defenders.
Also this one.
Jamie pointed to Latirces. Jamie's voice remained a sonorous rumble, but I fancied I could hear thunderclaps under the surface, ready to break loose.
Is he now a friend? Am I to fight side by side with my enslaver?
Hunter Kowalski brandished her screwdriver.
Not likely.
Wait, I yelped. The Tirsis can be useful. Again, I wasn't sure why I spoke up.
It seemed counterproductive to my main goal, which was to always keep myself safe and popular.
Latirces knows Commodus's plans. He knows what sort of forces will attack us.
And Latirces's life is at stake, just like ours are. I explained how Commodus had ordered Lit's death, and how Latirces had stabbed his former master in the neck.
That does not make me trust him.
Sarah hissed.
The crowd grumbled in agreement. A few hunters reached for their weapons.
Hold it!
Emmy climbed onto the dining table. Her long hair had come undone from its braid, strands of silver sweeping the sides of her face. Her hands were splotchy with bread dough. Over her camouflage combat clothes, she wore an apron with a picture of a hamburger and the slogan, "Keep your hands off my buns." Still, the hard gleam in her eyes reminded me of that young princess of Naxos who had jumped off a cliff with her sister, trusting the gods. The princess who had decided she would rather die than live in fear of her drunken, angry father. I had never considered that growing older, grayer, and thicker might make someone more beautiful. Yet that seemed to be the case for Emmy. Standing on the table, she was the room's calm, steady center of gravity.
For those of you who don't know me, she began, my name is Hemethia. Joe and I run the way station. We never turn away people who are in trouble, even former enemies.
She nodded to Latirces.
We attract outcasts here. Orphans and runaways. folks who've been abused, mistreated, or misled. Folks who just don't feel at home anywhere else. She gestured to the barreled ceiling, where the stained glass fractured sunlight into green and gold geometry. Britta Martis, the Lady of Nets, helped build this place. A safety net for your friends, I blurted, remembering what Josephine had told me. But a trap for your enemies. Now I was the center of attention. Once again, I didn't like it. I was really starting to worry about myself. My face burned from the sudden flush of blood to my cheeks. Sorry, I told Emmy. She studied me as if wondering where to aim her next arrow. She had apparently not quite forgiven me for possibly being Georgina's divine father, even though she'd had that news for at least 5 minutes. I suppose I could forgive her. Sometimes such a revelation can take an hour or more to process. At last, she nodded brusquely. Apollo is right. Tomorrow we may be attacked, but our enemies are going to find out that the way station protects its own. Commodus won't leave this net alive. Josephine and I will fight to defend this place and anyone who is under our roof. If you want to be part of our family, for a day or forever, you are welcome. All of you. She looked directly at Lit. The Cornhusker's face paled, his scars almost disappearing. He opened his mouth to say something, but managed only a choking noise. He slid down against the wall and began to shudder, silently sobbing. Josephine crouched next to him. She gazed at the crowd as if asking, "Anybody still got a problem with this guy?" Next to me, Jamie grunted.
"I like these women," he said. "They have Igboya."
I didn't know what Igboya meant.
I couldn't even guess what language it was.
But I liked the way Jamie said it. I decided I would have to purchase some Igboya as soon as possible. "Well then," Emmy wiped her hands on her apron. "If anyone wants to leave, now's the time to say so. I'll make you a brown bag lunch to go." No one replied. "Right," Emmy said. "In that case, everyone gets an afternoon chore." She made me peel carrots. Honestly, we were facing an imminent invasion, and I, the former god of music, was stuck in the kitchen prepping salad. I should have been strolling around with my ukulele, lifting everyone's spirits with my songs and my shining charisma, not skinning root vegetables. On the bright side, the hunters of Artemis had to clean the cow pens, so perhaps there was some justice in the cosmos. Once dinner was ready, the crowd scattered across the main hall to eat. Josephine sat with Laterces in his corner, talking to him slowly and calmly, the way one might treat a pit bull rescued from a bad owner. Most of the hunters sat in the griffin roosts, dangling their legs over the ledge as they surveyed the hall below. From their low voices and grave expressions, I imagined they were talking about how best to kill large numbers of enemies tomorrow. Hunter Kowalski volunteered to bunk in Georgina's room for the night. The little girl had remained fast asleep since her experience on the Throne of Memory, but Hunter wanted to be there for her just in case she woke up. Emmy gratefully agreed, but not until after shooting me an accusatory look that said, "I don't see you volunteering to sit with your kid all night." Honestly, as if I was the first god who'd ever forgotten he sired a child who was then carried away by a decapitated ghost to be raised by two women in Indianapolis. The two half-starved demigods, brothers named Deacon and Stan, who I learned had been residents of the way station for over a year, now rested in the infirmary with IV drips of nectar. Sarah had taken a basket of eggs and slithered off to the sauna for the night. Jamie ate with some of the other escapees on the sofas, which did not make me feel neglected at all. This left me at the dining table with Meg. What else is new? Leo, Calypso, Emmy, and Thalia Grace. Emmy kept glancing across the room at Josephine and Latirces. Our new friend Latirces. She sounded remarkably earnest when she said the word friend. I talked with him during chore time. He helped me churn the ice cream. He told me quite a bit about the armies we'll be facing tomorrow. There's ice cream? I asked. I had a natural ability to focus on the most important details when someone was talking. Later, Emmy promised, though her tone told me I might not be getting any. It's vanilla. We were going to add frozen peaches, but... She looked at Meg. We thought that might be in poor taste. Meg was too busy shoveling tofu stir-fry into her mouth to respond. At any rate, Emmy continued, Latirces estimates a few dozen mortal mercenaries, about the same number of demigods from the Imperial household, a few hundred assorted cynocephali and other monsters, plus the usual hordes of Blemyai disguised as local police, firefighters, and bulldozer operators. Oh, good, said Thalia Grace. The usual hordes. Emmy shrugged. Commodus means to raise Union Station. He'll make it look to the mortals like an emergency evacuation. A gas leak, Leo guessed. It's almost always a gas leak. Calypso picked the shredded carrots out of her salad, which I took as a personal insult. So we're outnumbered 10-1? 20-1? No sweat, Leo said. I'll handle the first 200 or so myself. Then if I get tired... Leo, stop. Calypso gave Emmy an apologetic frown. He jokes more when he's nervous. He also jokes worse when he's nervous. I have no idea what you're talking about. Leo inserted carrot fangs in his mouth and snarled. Meg almost choked on her stir-fry. Thalia let out a long sigh. Oh, yeah. This is going to be a fun battle. Emmy, how are you stocked for extra arrows? I'm going to need a full quiver just for shooting Leo. Emmy smiled. We have plenty of weaponry. And thanks to Leo and Josephine, the way station's defenses have never been stronger. You're welcome. Leo spat out his fangs. Also, I should mention the giant bronze dragon in the corner. Assuming I can finish his tune-up tonight, he's still not at 100%. Normally, I would have found that giant bronze dragon quite reassuring, even at 75%. But I did not like 20-1 odds. The bloodthirsty cries of the arena audience still rang in my ears. Calypso? I said. What about your magic? Has it returned? Her look of frustration was quite familiar. It was the same look I got whenever I thought of all the marvelous, godly things I could no longer do. Only a few bursts, she said. This morning I moved a coffee cup across the counter. Yeah, Leo said. But you did that awesomely. Calypso swatted him. Josephine says it'll take time. She hesitated. Once we survive tomorrow. I got the feeling that wasn't what she'd intended to say. Leo and Emmy exchanged a conspiratorial glance. I didn't press the issue. At the moment, the only conspiracy I'd be interested in would be a clever plan to smuggle me back to Mount Olympus and reinstate me to godhood before breakfast tomorrow. We will make do, I decided. Meg slurped down the last of her stir-fry. Then she demonstrated her usual exquisite manners by belching and wiping her mouth with her forearm. Not you and me, Lester. We won't be here. My stomach started tossing its own little salad. But... Prophecy, dummy. First light, remember? Yes, but if the way station is attacked, shouldn't we be here to help? This was an odd question coming from me. When I was a god, I would have been delighted to leave the mortal heroes to fend for themselves. I would have made popcorn and watched the bloodbath from a distance on Mount Olympus, or simply caught the highlight reel later. But as Lester, I felt obliged to defend these people. My dear old Emmy, gruff Josephine, and not so little Georgina, who might or might not be my child. Thalia and the hunters, Jamie of the lovely loincloth, the proud griffin parents upstairs, the excellent elephant downstairs, even the dislikable Letirces. I wanted to be here for them. It may seem strange to you that I hadn't already considered my conflicting obligation to seek out the cave of Trophonius at first light, and that this might prevent me from being at the way station. In my defense, gods can split their essence into many different manifestations at once. We don't have a lot of experience with scheduling. Meg is right, Emmy said. Trophonius has summoned you. Getting your prophecy may be the only way to prevent the Emperor's prophecy from coming true. I was the god of prophecies, and even I was starting to hate prophecies. I glanced at the spirit of Agamethus, hovering by the ladder to the loft. I thought of the last message he had given me. We cannot remain. Did he mean the defenders of the way station? Or Meg and me? Or something else entirely? I felt so frustrated I wanted to grab his magic eight ball and bounce it off his non-existent head. Cheer up, Thalia told me. If Commodus comes at us with his full strength, the Oracle might be guarded with just a skeleton crew. It'll be your best chance to get in. Yeah, Leo said. Besides, maybe you'll make it back in time to fight with us. Or, you know, we'll all die and it won't matter. That makes me feel much better, I grumbled. What problems could we possibly run into, just Meg and I? Yep, Meg agreed. She did not sound the least bit worried. This seemed like a failure of imagination to me. I could envision all sorts of horrible fates that might befall two people wandering into the dangerous cavern of a terrifying, hostile spirit. I would rather fight a host of Blemyai on bulldozers. I would even consider peeling more carrots. As I was cleaning up the dinner plates, Emmy caught my arm. Just tell me one thing, she said. Was it payback? I stared at her. Was what payback? Georgina, she murmured. For me, you know, giving up your gift of immortality. She pressed her lips into a tight line, as if she didn't trust them to say any more. I hadn't known I could feel any worse until I did. I really hate that about the mortal heart. It seems to have an infinite capacity for getting heavier. Dear Emmy, I said. I would never. Even on my worst days, when I'm destroying nations with plague arrows or putting together set lists for kids' bop compilations, I would never take revenge in such a way. I swear to you, I had no idea you were here, or that you had left the hunters, or that Georgina existed, or... Actually, I just had no idea about anything. And I'm so sorry. To my relief, a faint smile flickered on her face. That's one thing I can believe, at least. That I am sorry? No, she said. That you had no idea about anything. Ah. So, we're good? She considered. For now. But when Georgie recovers, we should talk further. I nodded, though I was thinking that my to-do list of unwelcome tasks was already quite full. Well then, I sighed, I suppose I should get some rest, and perhaps start composing a new death haiku. 30. Lester, slap yourself. owe for just one night without looking like a fool. I had no luck with the haiku. I kept getting stuck on the first line, "I don't want to die," and couldn't think of anything to add. I hate elaborating when the main idea is so perfectly clear. The hunters of Artemis bedded down in the griffin roosts, after setting tripwires and motion sensor alarms. They always did this whenever I camped with them, which I found silly. Sure, when I was a god, I used to flirt with them shamelessly, but I never went further than that. And as Lester, I had no wish to die with 1,000 silver arrows in my chest. If nothing else, the hunters should have trusted my self-interest. Thalia, Emmy, and Josephine sat together at the kitchen table for a long while, conversing in hushed tones. I hoped they were discussing more hunter secrets, some deadly weapons they could use against Commodus's armies, moon ballistic missiles, perhaps, or moon napalm. Meg hadn't bothered finding a guest room. She'd crashed on the nearest couch and was snoring away. I stood nearby, not ready to go back to the room I shared with Leo Valdez. I watched the moon rise through the giant rose window above Josephine's workstation. A voice at my shoulder said,
"Not tired."
It was a good thing I was no longer god of the sun. If someone had startled me that badly in my chariot, I would have charged upward so fast that high noon would have happened at 6 a.m. Jamie stood next to me, a dapper apparition in brown. The moonlight gleamed copper on his scalp. His necklace of red and white beads peeked from beneath the collar of his dress shirt. "Oh," I said. No. I leaned against the wall, hoping to look casual, attractive, and suave. Unfortunately, I missed the wall. Jamie was kind enough to pretend not to notice.
"You should try to sleep," he rumbled. "The challenge you face tomorrow."
Worry lines creased his forehead.
"I cannot imagine."
Sleep seemed like an alien concept, especially now, with my heart chunking like a defective pedal boat. Oh, I don't sleep much. I used to be a god, you know. I wondered if flexing my muscles would help prove this point. I decided it would not. "And you? Are you a demigod?" Jamie grunted.
"An interesting word. I would say I am Elomiran, one of the others. I am also a graduate accounting student at Indiana University."
I had no idea what to do with that information. I could think of no topics of conversation that would make me look interesting to a graduate student of accounting. I also hadn't realized how much older Jamie was than me. I mean, more to Lester me, not God me. I was confused. "But Sarah said you worked for Commodus," I recalled. "You're a gladiator?" The edges of his mouth tugged downward.
"Not a gladiator. I only fight on weekends for money. Mixed martial arts. Gidibo and Damba."
"I don't know what those are." He chuckled.
"Most people don't. They are Nigerian martial art forms. The first Gidibo is a wrestling style of my people, the Yoruba. The other is a Hausa sport. More violent, but I like it."
"I see," I said, though in fact I didn't. Even in ancient times, I had been woefully ignorant of anything below the Saharan desert. We Olympians tended to stay in our own neighborhood around the Mediterranean, which was, I agree, terribly cliquish. "You fight for money?"
"To pay my tuition," Jamie agreed. "I did not know what I was getting into with this emperor person."
"And yet you survived," I noted. "You can see that the world is, much stranger than most mortals realize. You, Jamie, must have lots of Igboya. His laughter was deep and rich.
Very good. My name is actually Olujime. For most Americans, Jamie is easier.
I understood. I'd only been immortal for a few months, and I was getting very tired of spelling out Papadopoulos. Well, Olujime, I said, I'm pleased to meet you. We are lucky to have such a defender. Olujime nodded gravely.
If we survive tomorrow, perhaps the way station can use an accountant. A piece of real estate so complex, there are many tax implications. I am joking,
he offered.
My girlfriend says I joke too much.
This time I sounded like I'd been kicked in the gut. Your girlfriend. Yes. Will you excuse me? I fled. Stupid Apollo. Of course Olujime had a girlfriend. I didn't know who or what he was, or why fate had dragged him into our strange little world. But obviously someone so interesting would not be single. Besides, he was much too old for me. Or young, depending on how you looked at it. I decided not to look at it at all. Exhausted but restless, I wandered the shifting corridors until I stumbled upon a small library. When I say library, I mean the old-fashioned kind, without books. Just scrolls stacked in cubbies. Ah, the smell of papyrus brought me back. I sat at the table in the center of the room and remembered the chats I used to have in Alexandria with the philosopher Hypatia. Now she was a smart mellow macarona. I wished she were here now. I could have used her advice on how to survive the cave of Trophonius. Alas, at present, my only advisor was stuck in the quiver on my back. Reluctantly, I pulled out the arrow of Dodona and set him on the table. The shaft of the arrow rattled against the table.
Long hast thou kept me quivered. Verily, thy levels of stupid astound me.
Have you ever wondered, I asked, why you have no friends?
Untrue, said the arrow. Each branch of Dodona's sacred grove, each twig and root, to all of these I am most dear.
I doubted that. More likely when it had come time to choose a branch to carve into an arrow to send on a quest with me, the entire grove had unanimously elected this particularly annoying length of ash. Even sacred oracles could only stand hearing forsooth and verily so many times. Then tell me, I said, O wise arrow, most dear to all manner of trees, how do we get to the cave of Trophonius? And how do Meg and I survive? The arrow's fletching rippled.
Thou shalt